Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Welcome on in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Full transparency. We are recording this on Sunday afternoon before the Super Bowl. You will be listening to it on Monday, February 8th, because let's be honest, we want to watch the Super Bowl, and I'm likely going to be intoxicated tonight. Welcome to the show. Frank Stanfill here, joined by Scott White. Chris was supposed to be on this podcast, but as soon as he joined, his internet went out. It is snowing again in New York City. There's like snowballs falling from the sky. It's absolutely insane. But Scott, I mean, Chris becomes an analyst. Guy takes a week off for vacation. Now he doesn't want to do the podcast. I don't know, man. I think he's starting to big time us here. I don't know.
Well, he's still technically on vacation, right? So maybe it was a divine intervention there. I don't know. I had to cancel a mock draft last week because my internet was out. So the internet gods are conspiring against us.
Crazy times indeed. Yeah. Look, everyone's working from home. So I imagine internets are bogged down right now. Today on the show, we are taking a closer look at ADP analysis, who is undervalued and overvalued. We'll go round by round, really focus in on the first like eight or so rounds, and then give you some picks outside the top 100 and top 200 as well. Scotty is hyped because his boy Marcell Ozuna returns to the Atlanta Braves. We also had a trade over the weekend. We'll get into all that. But Scott, let's start with this. ADP analysis is the crux of the show. Give me one of your favorite undervalued players right now in drafts.
Matt Olson, who's going 82nd overall. And I don't really understand why. He didn't have a great year last year, as was true of a lot of first basemen. Most aren't getting dinged as hard for it as he is. And I don't see anything in the underlying numbers to suggest he's a different player. So he hit 195. He still had 14 homers, though, in those 60 games. So obviously the power is still intact. I still think Matt Olson and Pete Alonso are basically mirror images of each other, one batting right-handed, one batting left-handed. And Pete Olson is going 53rd overall compared to Matt Olson's 82nd overall. When I was putting together my position strategy pieces, I had a studs category at each position, the studs. And among hitter positions, I'm pretty sure Matt Olson was the lowest ranked of the stud, had the lowest ADP of any of the studs at any hitter position. So he's definitely being undervalued.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I'm a fan of Matt Olson. I was last year. He let us down with a 195 batting average, but seems like he was hurt by some bad BABIP luck. 227 BABIP for him in the shortened season, whereas he is a career 277 BABIP guy. Again, that is Matt Olson, so we would expect the batting average to bounce back a little bit. Not that he's going to be a contributor there, but he definitely should not be batting below 200 as well. On the other side there, Scott, someone that is overvalued, you might be looking the other way at in drafts.
So I actually think Jose Abreu, I'll stick at first base. Jose Abreu is somebody who's being overvalued, going 33rd overall, so third round pick, even in a 12-team league on average. And I've noticed when we do our mock drafts with folks around the industry, he doesn't tend to go as high as the third round. So I think we're more of the mindset he should be like a fifth rounder. I mean, obviously, if you take last year's numbers, fine, he deserves to go in the third round. But it's such an outlier for him to produce at that MVP level at an advanced age. I mean, he's closing in on 35. And to have this outlier performance over a very short season, he's always going to be good. He's always going to be a solid contributor for your team. So I don't want to call him like a bust, but for a third, like I have a very hard time believing he's going to produce like he did last year. And he pretty much need to live up to that ADP.
Yeah, the ADP is very steep for Jose Abreu, who is being drafted at pick 33 overall. And I agree, it's tough because he will be 34 years old when the season starts. You're buying coming off an MVP season where he hit 317. He had 60 RBI in 60 games. Guy was on pace for 162 RBI over the course of a full season. So it's just absolutely massive year. And I really like the player, but agree, in the third round of a 12-team league, that is very tough. But, you know, in drafts where everyone has that same mindset, Scott, he might fall a little bit. And I did a 15-team roto draft recently where I got him at pick 51. So in the fourth round of a 15-teamer, I think that's actually pretty a pretty solid range to get him outside the top 50.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's fine. I don't see that as a discount from where I expect him to perform, but it's obviously safer than drafting him 33rd overall. So I'm going to see. Let me see if I can pull up my roto rankings real quick to see where I rank him. I don't know how quickly I'll get. Oh, here we go. So I have Jose Abreu 44th. So I guess 51st I would be fine with as well.
Nice. All right. Nice little endorsement there from Scott on my Jose Abreu pick. Again, don't take him inside the first three rounds, but if he falls a little bit, something that we can get behind. So we're going to do a lot of this throughout the course of today's podcast, but want to focus in on some of the news and notes. I wanted to get Chris's thoughts on Trevor Bauer. It seems like that's not going to happen. So we'll wait for Chris to join us hopefully later on in the week, maybe later on in this podcast, if he can get his internet up and running again. Scott, I mentioned Marcell Ozuna, your boy, returns to the Atlanta Braves. This happened on Friday night. Everything happens on Friday night, Scott. Like, we recorded the Trevor Bauer emergency podcast, and we were like, you know, Marcell Ozuna is going to sign. It's going to happen. Please let him go back to the Braves so that we don't have to do another emergency podcast. As much as we love doing them, two in one day would have been pretty frustrating there. But your thoughts, him going back to your Atlanta Braves, he cashes in after the massive 2020 season. How much are you buying in on him? His ADP is in that fourth round range right now.
Yeah, so I am. I think it's impossible to look at what Marcell Ozuna did. I mean, he ended up being the number one outfielder in points leagues ahead of even Mookie Betts.
He finished in roto formats and in head-to-head points as the number one outfielder. Just massive season.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I don't think a lot of people listening would realize that. I have him 40th in my roto rankings. A little lower in points, obviously, just because there are more pitchers ahead of him in points. So for the most part, I'm buying into it. Like, I think it's unreasonable to think he will put up that exact same line. Like, there will be a half step back just because, you know, law of averages dictates that. But, you know, heading into the season, he was that guy who, man, he keeps falling well short of his expected stats. What happens if he just gets normal luck, basically? I don't know if that's the fairest way to categorize it, but his talent level looks much higher than his performance so far, and you know, he backed that up in 2020. I think he's a stud bat. I'm excited he's back with the Braves. I think in terms of his fantasy value, that's obviously a good thing too, because we know he's comfortable there. We know he works in that park. We know it's a good lineup for him. And so, if you know, he's not a bad choice as a number one outfielder in fantasy, I don't think.
Yeah. And Scott was referencing the underperformance in 2019 for Marcell Ozuna, where he hit .242 with a .472 slugging percentage. And while he did that, his expected batting average, according to StatCast, which based on his quality of contact, said that he deserved a .291 batting average and a .548 slugging percentage. And then in 2020, you know, obviously has the massive year. He hits .338, 18 home runs, and StatCast once again backed him up. So I think that we have enough data now where, okay, even if he's getting pushed up the board a little bit compared to where he's been going in years past, again, this is Marcell Ozuna, I think he's worth it because the underlying numbers really do back up the performance that he put together last season. So you mentioned, Scott, you have him as a ranked as a top 10 outfielder in both formats, in head-to-head points and in roto. You would take Marcell Ozuna over someone like Springer in head-to-head points?
Yeah, it's a close call, but I think so.
How about in roto? Would you take one of these youngsters that can run, someone like a Kyle Tucker or Luis Robert, ahead of Ozuna? Because, you know, in years past, Ozuna will give you a few steals, but he didn't steal any actually last season. So I don't really know what we should expect there.
Yeah, I've been looking at that recently. I think I have Ozuna ahead right now. Kyle Tucker. I could see taking Kyle Tucker over Ozuna more than I could Robert. And of course, to some degree, it just depends on, do you have zero steals at the point that pick is coming up? Then, you know, maybe then I would take Robert. But I think there's a lot of downside with Robert that is not being factored in by a lot of people. He's probably going to wind up in bust 2.0 for me. So I don't expect to have many shares in Robert, but I understand at some point you can't always, when you're looking to meet that steals need, you can't always take players you like because there's just not enough base stealers to go around.
Yeah, Ozuna's ADP 43.8. So I mentioned in the fourth round, Kyle Tucker right now at 35 and Luis Robert at 37.8. So both going slightly ahead of Ozuna. And I would expect that's because you project 20-ish steals for each of those guys, Kyle Tucker and Luis Robert. We had a trade over the weekend. The A's acquired Elvis Andrus, catcher Aramis Garcia, and cash from the Texas Rangers in exchange for designated hitter Chris Davis, catcher Jonah Heim, and right-handed pitching prospect Dane Acker for the A's. Elvis Andrus will play shortstop, and since the start of 2019, he has not been great. .263 batting average, .384 slug, .688 OPS during that time. He still did have 3 home runs and 3 steals in just 29 games last season. So Scott, moving over to the A's, expected to likely play every day at shortstop. Anything left in the tank for Elvis Andrus?
I'm not hopeful of that. He might be a cheap contributor in steals for you since the playing time's going to be there. You know, last year, obviously short seasons, though 3 steals, not really sure what to make of that, but he had 31 in 2019, hit .275 still. That would obviously be useful, particularly as late as you can get him in a roto league, but clearly on the decline, clearly need to have low expectations for him. And the same is true for Chris Davis. Really, it was kind of a swap of has-beens here. I think maybe the most notable fantasy implication here is that, okay, Davis can only play DH. Willie Calhoun, I mean, we've seen him play left field recently, but he was basically just a DH last year, and they have a full outfield anyway, the Rangers do. So what does this mean for Willie Calhoun? I'm less interested in him as a sleeper if Chris Davis is going to be cutting into his at-bats.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering what this does for not everyone's playing time, but I think that it can somewhat affect David Dahl and Leody Taveras as well. I think Joey Gallo is pretty safe to play near every day in right field for the Texas Rangers. But as of now, they do have, the Rangers have Chris Davis, they have Willie Calhoun, they have Leody Taveras, as I mentioned, and David Dahl for basically 3 spots, center field, left field, and DH. So you're basically seeing Chris Davis and Willie Calhoun just take away from each other. You're not worried as much about Dahl and Taveras there, Scott?
I mean, it would require for them to lose at bats to Chris Davis, it would require Willie Calhoun to play some outfield, and I'm not sure how interested. Yeah, he still played 8 games there last year, Willie Calhoun did. I know he was DH only. He was only 2 games short of getting outfield eligibility, so maybe they'll be. Yeah, I doubt it'll be a situation where it's always this thing. You know, if David Dahl is struggling, then of course he's going to lose more playing time. If Willie Calhoun is killing it, then, you know, of course he's going to lose less playing time. But I think going in, the plan would be more like a DH platoon You know, other guys like Delino DeShields, Charlie Culberson might be around to impact the at bats of somebody like David Dahl. But obviously that was always a possibility even before this trade.
And Tavares is a pretty popular sleeper candidate I've seen, at least in roto leagues, because 4 homers, 8 steals in 33 games in 2020 for Tavares. So he does have some speed, showed that off in the minor leagues as well. Yeah, he's played about 65 games at AA. So there's a chance that he starts the year in the minors, but he looked pretty good last year in his limited playing time. Scott, at catcher, I just wanted to address this with the Rangers as well. They acquired Jonah Heim. They also have Jose Trevino, and we're kind of excited about Sam Huff, who is one of the top catching prospects in baseball. He obviously has massive power. He flashed out a little bit towards the end of the season. So how do you see the catcher situation playing out here for the Rangers?
Well, I had read from one of the Rangers beat writers, I don't remember which one, that Sam Huff's expected to begin in the minors, that they're planning to go with Trevino as their starter to begin the era. Expect Huff to be up at some point, obviously. But I don't think acquiring Jonah Heim is going to impact Huff's timetable at all. So minimal impact there.
Alrighty. Yeah, I mean, Sam Huff, there's a lot to be excited about there. Big power, lots of strikeouts, almost like a Joey Gallo-esque at the catcher position. But we should see him at some point here in 2021. Last thing on this trade, A's GM David Forrest said Saturday that they're in the market for bullpen help. They did manage to save some money here in this trade or receive money from the Rangers. Either way, they have some more money available. And Trevor Rosenthal and Mark Melanson are still out there. So as of now, it looks like Jake Diekman is the favorite, the in-house favorite for saves with Oakland, but there's still a chance that they can sign another reliever for the back end there. Speaking of the A's, we didn't start Mike Fiers. They brought him back on a one-year deal. He's really not very good for fantasy purposes anymore. The Mets signed outfielder Albert Almora, more of a defense first type player, and he projects to play against left-handed pitching in a platoon in center field with Brandon Nimmo playing against right-handed pitching. So there you go. Not really much to see there. The Reds.
I like Brandon Nimmo more than that, but yeah, apparently that's the direction they're going to go.
Yeah, look, Nimmo, especially in points leagues or OBP, he's fantastic. And if he leads off against right-handed pitching, he should be able to score a good amount of runs as well. So he's a good player, but it seems like they don't really want to give him opportunities against left-handed pitching. So at least in a platoon to start there for Brandon Nimmo. The Reds apparently have been in contact with Jonathan Villar regarding their open shortstop job, though a deal is not yet in place. VR would be a nightmare defensively at shortstop for the Cincinnati Reds, but it would be pretty fun for fantasy. So, something to monitor. I mean,
he becomes the, after Adalberto Mondesi, VR becomes the expected steals leader, I would say, if he's an everyday player. I wasn't counting on him being an everyday player, but it seems like the Reds would be a good destination for that and might help him reclaim some of the power he lost in that move from Baltimore to Miami last year.
Yep, no, definitely a fair point. If he had the opportunity to play every day again, we could see 15-plus homers, 30-plus steals, definitely valuable, more so from a roto perspective. Of course, before we get into the ADP review, quickly promote a few things. Moving forward, you will now be able to watch us stream Fantasy Baseball Today. I mentioned this late last week, but we're going to go live starting Monday night, but moving forward, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights around 10 p.m. Eastern time. That's typically when we record Fantasy Baseball Today. You'll be able to watch us live. And so you could do that on our YouTube channel. So make sure to subscribe. That's youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. Turn on notifications so you get an alert every time we go live. You can watch everything happen here live with Chris and his cat and Scott and his living room. There's not really much going on there. Maybe we get a cat somewhere in there, Scott, and
used to have one.
Make things happen.
Not anymore.
But we're also going to be live on the CBS Sports HQ Twitch channel as well. So you can watch on either site, either stream. You can come hang out, hop in the chat, ask some questions, have some fun. And just a programming note that the rest of this week, you'll be hearing our position previews. We're going to start those for 2021. We'll have catcher, first, and second base this week. ADP review, we'll be using Fantasy Pros average draft position for this exercise, which currently uses an aggregate of draft data from the NFBC, that's the National Fantasy Baseball Championship, Fantrax, RT Sports, and Yahoo, and before long, CBS ADP will be part of that aggregate as well. I'll put the link to the ADP in the podcast and YouTube description, so if you want to click on it and follow along with some of the players that we're talking about, feel free to do so. But Scott, as a precursor to this ADP conversation, we got an Apple Podcast review question, and I thought that it was a pretty interesting one, and it has to do with ADP. So this one's from Jeff in Washington, D.C. says, I rely a lot on the CBS experts, that would be us, when I rank players for drafts, but was wondering whether to temper those rankings with ADP this year. If, for example, you rank a player 20 spots higher than ADP, do you just pick your guy, or do you weigh ADP and potentially wait because you probably can? This would mostly apply where experts' ranks are substantially higher than ADP. So, Scott, this is basically a get your guys conversation. Now, just because you rank a player 20 spots higher than ADP, do you have to take them there, or maybe, you know, take them one round ahead of ADP just to make sure you get that player because you're excited about them? How do you weigh those things together?
So I treat my rankings, and this has been a point of contention over the years. I construct my rankings as a draft guide, as a tool to use in the draft. This is the order you should draft these players. And so I'm taking into account perception. I'm taking into account ADP. A lot of the changes I make to my rankings over the course of draft prep season, because obviously when I first put together the rankings, I'm kind of going in blind. I don't have any of that info. But as I'm adjusting rankings leading up to the height of draft prep season, leading up to opening day, the changes are being made because I'm finding I can get certain players later, or players that I want to get more of, I'm not able to get them because I don't rank them high enough. So I'm adjusting my rankings with that in mind, with ADP in mind. So that would be the answer for my rankings personally. But I know a lot of people just rank them based on this is how I think their numbers are going to look at the end of the season, and not accounting for what other people are doing at all. So, you know, there's no set way to do rankings, which makes it difficult to answer this question. But I guess if I'm going to apply an answer for just rankings in general, I would say no, consider the rankings, but also factor in ADP, because there's no reason to reach for a guy by three rounds, maybe one round, like you said, if it's somebody you really want, but you obviously want to maximize the value of every pick, and you have to take into account ADP if you do, which again, I try to already do in my rankings, but if you're using somebody else's rankings, you can't assume that.
No, it's a good point. And we spoke about this recently for one of our mock drafts where I think Kyle Hendricks went in like the third round. I think it was our points league mock draft where you probably, based on ADP, didn't have to pull him up the board that high. Maybe the fourth round, like if you just want to make sure that you get him. But based on ADP, probably would have been there in the fifth or even the sixth round. So there are different ways to make rankings, but I think it is foolish to completely ignore average draft position just to give yourself an idea of where players are going. So you know, okay, if I like this guy and he's going at pick 80, but I want to make sure I get him, again, maybe you pull him up the board by one round, but you have to maximize the value of all your picks. So I thought that was very well said. And my rankings, similar, Scott, I take into account recent ADP trends. So at NFBC, you can sort it by a time frame. So I'll look at things like that. But ultimately, my rankings, my top 300 for both head-to-head points and roto are, if I'm on the board, which player would I take between this player, like between all the players available, would I draft these guys? And that is how I do my rankings. And
that's what I think. That's what I always thought rankings should be. But I know like there are rankings contests that are run on Fantasy Pros, and they basically assess at the end of the year whose rankings were most accurate, which I get too. But the rankings fill a specific function in draft prep season. And so if you're doing it for some accuracy contest at the end of the season, I think you're doing the people looking at the rankings a disservice.
Well, Scott, I'm happy you brought that up. I'll give myself a little pat on the back here, but I have finished top 10 in the accuracy competition on Fantasy Pros each of the past two seasons. I haven't gotten the results, or I haven't seen them yet. Maybe they came out and I just wasn't part of the top 10. But for 2018 and 2019, I have finished top 10 in the competition. So hopefully can keep that going. but yeah, let's jump right in. First round, we'll go round by round here. Maybe not spend as much time on each player so we can get to as many as we possibly can. But the first round, Scott, I mean, does anything stand out? Obviously, it starts with Ronald Acuna here, Mookie Betts, Fernando Tatis. You have your top three at the top. Mike Trout right behind those names. We have the big three of Gerrit Cole, Jacob deGrom, and Shane Bieber ranked inside the top 12 picks. The one that stands out for me as potentially undervalued, it's really hard to say over undervalued in the first round, but Christian Yelich was arguably the number one player being drafted in fantasy last year, and now you're getting him at an ADP of 11.5. So if you are still a believer in Christian Yelich and the talent, he is potentially undervalued at the spot.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I have him 9th. No, I think I have him 10th, actually, because Trevor Story checks in behind him here in ADP. I have Story ahead of Yelich, but I have Jose Ramirez behind him. I have Gerrit Cole behind him. That's the one that really stands out for me. You've been saying yourself that you would prefer Gerrit Cole number one at starting pitcher. I thought you were kind of on an island with that, but apparently not, because Gerrit Cole is going first of the big three in ADP. I have him a few spots behind both Bieber, who I have number one, and DeGrom too. So Cole's the one who stands out for me as being, I guess, overrated. But obviously, if he's your guy, the first round is where you need to take him.
Yeah, so I have Gerrit Cole as my SP1 in points leagues just because he has consistently gone a little bit deeper into starts over the past couple of years than Jacob deGrom has. But in Roto, any type of
head. Neither as deep as Bieber.
That is true.
Why I have him number one.
Yeah, which helps for points leagues and obviously helps their chances at getting wins as well. In any type of Roto or head-to-head categories context, I will take Jacob deGrom, I think, on an inning-by-inning basis, he will be the best starting pitcher in fantasy. So I'll take him in Roto. I'll take Gerrit Cole in head-to-head points leagues. The second round, these are picks 13 through 24. That starts with Freddie Freeman, and it ends with Max Scherzer. Some potential overvalued players in this range, Scott. We spoke about him on the tiers episode, but Manny Machado, you have in the same tier as guys like Alex Bregman and obviously Anthony Rendon. We'll talk about those a little bit further down in the third round, but based on that, you know, he would be overvalued in the second round range. And Bo Bichette, which I think is an interesting case, Scott, because I'll keep making this comparison. I don't know if the upside is as high, but I have this like Fernando Tatis vibe with Bo Bichette, where yes, you have to pay a big price in the second round, but I think that there's a chance that we could be drafting Bo Bichette as a first rounder next year. But it's also a deep position at shortstop, and you have to pay a pretty penny here in the second round to get him.
Yeah, I'm really surprised he's going this high. I think it might be justified. I would like to have more shares of Bo Bichette than it appears I'm going to have based on this ADP. But the thing you have to keep in mind about Bo Bichette is he's played 75 career games. He hasn't even played half a season in the majors yet. And some, you know, a big disparity in the stats he put up pre-injury and post-injury last year. He played only 29 games last year. I think it was a hamstring injury he had, or a quad injury, something in the leg. Was unbelievable before it. Was not so great after it. So, like, you can kind of parse those 75 games and not be really that sure what you're getting from Bo Bichette. But, I mean, the upside looks like a five-category contributor. The upside looks like somebody who we might... another shortstop who we might be drafting in the first round as early as next year, like you said. It's just, you're passing up some really good proven talent by taking him this high. At his own position, by the way, like Xander Bogaerts is going 9 picks later on average. Not going to provide the steals we hope Bichette will provide, I guess. So that's probably why, but certainly a lot more, you can feel a lot more confident what you're getting from Xander Bogaerts and that it's going to be high end.
Yeah, Bichette, you mentioned the 75 games that he's played, a .307 batting average, 16 home runs, 8 steals. This doesn't work for every player, obviously, but if you just double that, a 150-game pace, that is 32 home runs, 16 steals, obviously over .300 batting average, 100 runs scored. I mean, that is a legit five-category contributor. So we were saying similar things about Tatis last year, where we recognize the upside, but again, I think you do have to bake in some downside taking Bichette as early as the second round. Potentially undervalued here, Scott, in the second round range. I'm scared about Max Scherzer. I have him on my I had him on my bus list 1.0, but there is certainly an outcome where he just kind of goes back to being Max Scherzer and returns first round value. I'm a little bit more skeptical of that, but if you're a believer, then he's undervalued in this range.
Yeah, I mean, this is about the range where I would draft him. So I, you know, he's not going to be showing up in my overrated, underrated column. Let's put it that way. But yeah, sure. There's still a chance he could be the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, you look at his game log from last year, double digit strikeout efforts were, he was still dominant in that category. And I suspect that if he got 4 months, his ERA and WHIP would have normalized to what we're used to seeing from Max Scherzer. But he is getting older. He's dealt with some injury issues the past couple years, and better safe than sorry.
Yeah, the strikeout numbers, the swinging strike rate, while a little bit lower for him, still really, really good compared to the rest of the league. So I think the strikeouts will still be there. But just some things that worry me, the underlying numbers regarding hard contact, batting average against being up the past couple years, and of course the age and injury risk with Scherzer has me fading him in that late second, early third round range. Speaking of the third round, picks 25 through 36. This starts with Nolan Arenado and ends with Anthony Rendon. So oddly enough, some third baseman there. But I will say Arenado, since the trade, there have been 8 drafts over at the NFBC in February, and his ADP during that time is 45. This is Nolan Arenado. So he has dropped to the fourth round of 12-team leagues. The 45 ADP is the same as Rafael Devers. So that was the first conversation we had, Scott, and I think it's spot on that people are basically choosing between Devers and Arenado. You prefer Devers. Mm-hmm. I still prefer Arenado now with the St. Louis Cardinals. Some potential overvalued players here in the third round, Scott. Adalberto Mondesi, only in points leagues. It's just worth mentioning, you know, if people are using ADP as a guide, points leagues are completely different than roto leagues, especially when it comes to someone like Adalberto Mondesi. And we spoke about Jose Abreu a little bit earlier at 33, where if he goes there, he is overvalued at the spot.
Yeah, I would say if you're using Fantasy Pros ADP to help with your head-to-head points, to help you gauge head-to-head points value, I mean, Fantasy Pros ADP is strictly doing 5x5. Categories. That's where they're getting, and specifically roto. I don't think it's useless if you want to do that, but I think you're better served just where they rank within a position as opposed to where they rank overall. And you have to account for certain exceptions that you know their categories league values just higher, like an Adalberto Mondesi, like a Starling Marte. Maybe you move somebody like Carlos Santana up to meet the need in points leagues. But yeah, if you're just looking at what order they rank in by each position and not the overall ranking like we're looking at here, I think it can still be useful for you in points leagues.
Yeah, and of course you can use our head-to-head points leagues rankings. You can look back at a mock draft, which we did, I think it was like 2 weeks ago now. So that is probably the best use of data for head-to-head points leagues. Again, this ADP more so for roto, 5x5 head-to-head categories, things like that. Undervalued in the third round, Scott. Alex Bregman and Rendon, I think we're just going to continue to harp on this. We've talked about these two names already a lot, but you know, your argument for drafting these guys is, why would you take Manny Machado in the second round when you can get Bregman or Rendon around later? And I will go as far as to say, I think these two guys might be two of the best values in drafts early on.
Yeah, I agree. I go into every draft expecting to get either Bregman or Rendon in round 3.
Sometimes
I've gotten Rendon in round 4 before.
Yep.
Which, you know, I must have really liked what else I was getting in round 3 to pass over him there myself. But it's possible. It's something I hope to do in every draft, is get one of those guys at a discount.
Yep, and I've used that as a reason to, maybe you don't want to start your draft with two starting pitchers, but certainly at least taking one starting pitcher within the first 2 rounds, just knowing that you can, it's a bankable asset having one of those third basemen available in the third round for you according to ADP. In the fourth round, Scott, picks 37 through 48. This starts with Eloy Jimenez at the top of the round, and it ends with Tyler Glasnow at the back end. Two names that stood out for me in terms of potentially being overvalued. and this is like, this is based on perception. So this is the eye of the beholder here. It depends how you like to draft. If you want to attack catchers early, then JT Realmuto, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. He is the best catcher. There's no doubt about it. I'm not doubting the talent. I just think it's a little tough to invest a fourth round pick for a catcher, given the position, and they take a beating, foul balls, and all these types of things are going on. And he's getting a little bit older as well. So Realmuto at 41 stood out to me as overvalued, and potentially Tyler Glass. Now it's another one. We're not doubting the talent. I just really don't know what the usage is going to be. And there's still an injury concern in the back of my mind when you have to take him as early as the fourth round.
Yeah. So there's a drop off at starting pitcher here between Woodruff and Snell Glasnow, where it's a guy who I trust the workload, or at least how deep he's going to go in individual starts, versus guys I don't trust that for in Snell and Glasnow. So they, and I see some of the pitchers going after Snell and Glasnow that I'd rather have. So I think I would say both of them are overvalued in this range, just because you want ace production from a pitcher you're drafting this early. And I think they'll be handled too carefully to really get that from them. I agree with you on Realmuto. He might be the single biggest advantage you could have at any position. And so it's likely somebody's going to take him here because they want that advantage. I don't care enough about that to take it this high. I think it'd have to be more like round six before I started thinking about Realmuto as opposed to round four here. I get it. I just, when 11 other teams are in the same boat at catcher versus the one, like, I don't feel like I'm that disadvantaged by not having that guy. And there are just things I need here more. I actually want to say, though, I think Corey Seager at 40th overall, I think Corey Seager is someone I'd prioritize over those two third basemen we talked about last round, Bregman and
Rendon.
Rendon.
Yep.
Yeah, Rendon. I think Corey Seager is just, I think he's amazing. I think you can make a case for him to be a first rounder already. What he did last year was so convincing to me, especially when you factor in that he sustained similar production throughout the postseason, a deep postseason run. So, you know, you're adding that many games onto that performance where he hit like Mike Trout, basically. Doesn't steal any bases. So, you know, I understand him getting pushed out of the first round for that reason, but fourth round, I think that's amazing value for a guy who is going to be in contention for the NL MVP award, I'm sure.
Yeah, the comp that we threw around a lot last year, and I think, well, I'll obviously stick with it with Corey Seager, is a Freddie Freeman light, where, mm-hmm. you know, close to a 300 batting average, really solid power numbers. Not that he's going to hit like 40 home runs, but, you know, 30 plus good counting stats in the middle of a really good lineup. Scott's shaking his head like, maybe it's possible. Maybe Corey Seager can hit.
I think 40 home runs is possible for Corey Seager. I'm not saying that's what you should project him for, but I think it's within the realm of possibility.
A few other hitters I think undervalued in this range. Marcell Ozuna, one that we already spoke about, just finishes the number one outfielder in both head-to-head points and in roto leagues. And another shortstop, and someone we brought up on Friday with Vlad Sedler as my potential candidate to be this year's Christian Yelich, and that's Tim Anderson. I think we can get over 300 batting average, potentially 25-25. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, leading off for a really good White Sox lineup. So some people are still a little hesitant on Tim Anderson. Fourth round, I'm willing to invest and buy in, especially in roto and categories leagues, points leagues. Maybe you drop him a little bit just because he doesn't walk all that much. In the fifth round, picks 49 through 60, starting with Starling Marte, and then ending with Liam Hendricks, overvalued. I got some New Yorkers here, Scott. Aaron Judge at 52 and Pete Alonso at 53. Nothing to do with the players themselves. I think that they're fine, but you made the case earlier for Matt Olson being undervalued because he's not dissimilar from Pete Alonso, and I will make the case for Giancarlo Stanton versus Judge. I really don't think that they're all that different of players, and Stanton you're getting 50 to 60 picks later, although he's only util only. So I just think these two New York players are overvalued for those reasons.
Yeah, I think Stanton's injury history is a little worse, but you know, kind of splitting hairs there, I guess. I think that's more an instance of all the DH only guys being, they are the most underrated players, all of them. Yordan Alvarez, JD Martinez, Stanton, you know, we've talked about a lot. Nelson Cruz, of course, annually underrated. So yeah, Stan fits the bill. I'm fine with Judge here. I've taken him in the fifth round before. You know, I'd take Voit over him, and Voit's two picks behind him here, so whatever. But I don't see Judge as being really overvalued here. I see Vladimir Guerrero, 56th, as just very glass half full still. And we talked, I didn't really get the chance to bring up this point when we were talking to Vlad Sedler last week. Vlad Sedler, that's right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's unfair to say that drafting Vladimir Guerrero of 56th overall is drafting him at the extent of his upside, because the extent of his upside is top 12. But you are drafting him for much more than he's delivered so far. And given the quality of players going in the same range, I don't think there's... I don't think it's justified. I think you're passing up too much by taking him here for less than a coin flip's chance that he delivers on it.
Scott, what do you think about Starling Marte in this range? The ADP last year for Marte was 29, and that's while he was with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And now we're getting the ADP for Starling Marte here at 49. So he's going 20 picks later. He is 1 year older. He's 32 years old. But especially in a roto context, to be able to get someone like this in the fifth round, potential 2020 bet, I feel like that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, I've never been a big Starling Marte guy, but I agree. Usually we're seeing him go in like round three, maybe even round two in a roto league. So it's kind of dependent on how many steals I have at this point, whether I value him versus somebody like George Springer or Aaron Judge. But it does seem like that could be a good pick for you.
All right, if you are listening on the podcast side, we're going to take a quick break. If you're watching on video, don't go anywhere, because we're going to continue.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Right now, in the sixth round, picks 61 through 72, starting with Max Fried and ending with Teoscar Hernandez. A few names here, Scott, that it immediately stand out as overvalued, potentially overvalued. The small sample squad. So it was guys that performed really well last year, but how much are we buying in? Names like Trent Grisham, Max Fried, Randy Rosarena, Zach Plesac, and Teoscar Hernandez. Scott, of those five, which ones would you actually label overvalued?
Hernandez is bust pick 1A for me. So I think he'd have to be the first one I name here too as being overvalued. I don't buy it at all. The strikeout rate was way too high. I think we just got his... He always hit the ball hard. We just saw him see it extra hard over a small, saw him hit it extra hard over a small sample. And I don't think that's something we could trust him to sustain over a full 162 game season. Max Fried I'm not going to go as far as to call him a bust, but I do think he's overvalued here. He's somebody who throughout last season, we saw him pitch closer to five innings every start than six innings every start. And, you know, you just compare his ERA to his XFIP, his Sierra, some regressions coming there too. The strikeouts were way down compared to 2019. And I think he's a good enough ground ball pitcher and just a fine pitcher overall. I'm not saying he's not going to be an asset for you in fantasy, but there are other pitchers I'd rather have who are going after him. I do like Grisham. I do like Plesac. It's a case-by-case basis thing. I'm not saying all these guys are overvalued. I don't think those two are so much because I buy into what they did a little more. But anytime you're relying on a small sample, of course, you're taking some risk there because weird things can happen over small samples that are hard to detect even if you know what to look for.
Mm-hmm. Some potential undervalued players, Scott, that stood out to me in the sixth round. Gleyber Torres, just, you know, what he's accomplished at his young age. Just a really, really weird 2020 season. And I saw a few people point this out, that apparently when he showed up to spring training, he was in fantastic shape. And then throughout the pandemic, like most of us, he put on a few extra pounds and didn't really show up in the best shape when they restarted things in the summer. So that definitely could have affected Gleyber Torres. But again, expected to hit in the middle of a great lineup in a great ballpark. We could see close to 30 home runs and good counting stats again in the sixth round. And Sonny Gray, Scott, someone, admittedly, he's a little bit tougher for me to figure out who is the real Sonny Gray. But his first seven starts last year, I mean, we were talking about this guy like he was going to be a second or third round pick entering 2021. I mean, he had a 1.94 ERA, a 1.01 whip in his first seven starts. And then he dealt with this back injury. He had, you know, two games where he got absolutely destroyed. After he returned from the injury, wasn't great either. So where are you at on Sonny Gray?
Totally confused, which is the story of his entire career. Even going back to his Oakland A's days, he'd have a season where he'd be in contention for Cy Young and then come back with a 5.69 ERA the next year. That's the story of his career. And like before the back injury, before he had those starts where he got throttled, the whiffs declined before that. I'd started to worry about Sonny Gray even before that happened. So, you know, he said the Reds gave him the cheat code in 2019 when he dominated down the stretch to get the most out of his slider, the swing and miss potential it has. And it looked like he was right for about three starts last year. And then it was back to the old Sonny Gray. I think this is a year to fade him, probably. Anytime he's coming off a good year, fade him. I don't think 65 overall is crazy high for him. But again, there are some pitchers like with Freed, there are some pitchers going after Gray that I'd rather have.
One of those pitchers is going in the seventh round, and the picks here, 73 through 84, starting with Javier Baez and ending with Jose Berríos. Scott, Carlos Carrasco is someone we have ranked inside of our top 20, ahead of a lot of names you've already mentioned. I have ranked ahead of Tyler Glasnow, and we're looking at potentially three rounds of ADP difference. So Carrasco is someone that immediately stands out, now with the New York Mets, of course, as being undervalued in this range.
I have no idea what people, why people are downgrading Carlos Carrasco like this. Obviously, it made sense going into last year. He was coming off leukemia. We weren't really sure how he was going to look after that battle. But he was great. He was great, and he got better as the year went on, and he was still capable of pitching deep into games, finished with a 2.91 ERA, had 10.9 K per night. He was as good as Carlos Carrasco has ever been, and now he's going to the NL that appears not to be using the DH in 2021. So that creates, you know, the potential for even a lower ERA than we've always seen from Carrasco. But really the biggest reason I rank Carrasco so much higher than others seem to, given the ADP, is he's somebody who's established as an innings eater already, somebody who's established year after year, he can go six, seven innings with consistency. And after the year we just had where nobody got to even 100 innings and we're worried about the workload every pitcher is going to take on. It seems like somebody like that, somebody with who's proven to take on a workload like that should be elevated. So it seems like a really easy call. I don't know why it's not reflected in the ADP that Carrasco needs to be borderline top 15 this year.
Yeah, I think it's probably just the age and potential injury concerns, and obviously has dealt with cancer and leukemia, and he beat it. But you mentioned he looked like himself last year. He looked like the Carrasco of old. So I'm with you there. I think he's a tremendous value going in the seventh round. Other potential undervalued players, util only. We talk a lot about these guys, Nelson Cruz, Yordan Alvarez, and Javier Baez, who is entering a contract year. He had a down season in 2020, but obviously has a proven track record. So we would expect him to bounce back at least to a certain extent here in 2021. Scott, some potential overvalued names: Denelson Lamet, injury related. He was awesome last year, but I think you have to worry about his elbow. How about Charlie Blackmon? Is an interesting one, Scott, because we didn't really talk about him with the Nolan Arenado trade, but you would have to imagine the counting stats will come down a little bit for him. And as great as he was the first month last year, he kind of came back down to earth for the second month, and he's getting up there in age. So what do you think about Blackmon in the seventh round?
I think it's fine. I mean, this is a guy I was still saying probably should be drafted in the second round last year. Turns out I was wrong about that. Everyone else was right to downgrade him more than I was. But it's really the power was just gone last year. He had 6 home runs in his 247 plate appearances, a 145 ISO. That was his lowest since 2015, before he became a fantasy stud, basically. And considering he's 34 years old, you know, maybe that's an indication he's really on the decline here. But I think just for batting average, for run scoring potential, it's fine taking him where he's going. His ADP is fine, and maybe you get lucky and he bounces back with another 25 plus homers and performs more like a third, fourth rounder. So I think it's appropriate. I think there's more of a chance it's undervalued here than overvalued.
I'll quickly mention in the eighth round, Ian Anderson, as much as I like the talent, he is going ahead of some starting pitchers that I think are a little bit more established. So someone that I worry a little bit that he's being overvalued. I don't know what the workload is necessarily going to be as well. Hitters. I mentioned hitters that I really like in these middle rounds a lot. Nick Castellanos, JD Martinez, another util-only bat, and Austin Meadows. Spoke a bunch about him already on previous podcasts. So big fan of those three hitters as well. Scott, anyone else that you have ready for the articles that you plan to write as being undervalued, overvalued, anyone that we might have missed or outside the top 100 that you'd like to highlight?
So I think Jose Altuve is undervalued, 98th overall. He's just getting buried. Everybody's just done with Jose Altuve when, you know, really it's that tiny sample of a season that's fueling that. And by the way, he followed that awful regular season with an amazing postseason performance. So he's only 30 years old. I think 98th overall for a guy who root for like close to a decade, right? Ranked as the number one second baseman we wanted in fantasy every year. I think that's really selling him short. Gio Urshela, he's going, let's see, 154th overall. And you compare that to somebody like Chris Bryant, who I don't have a lot of hope for anymore, going 114th overall. Urshela totally backed up his breakthrough 2019 in 2020. So I have no doubts about him anymore. He was one of the highest point per game averagers at third base in 2020. Granted, it was a position where there were a lot of underachievers, but Urshela, there's really no reason to wonder about him anymore. I think going a little deeper, Andrés Giménez is being overvalued. 193rd overall. It's not so bad, but I think people are imagining he's this 30 steals guy. And I think 20 to 25 is probably a more appropriate expectation. I'm given the personnel Cleveland has right now, and it's not even clear Jimenez is going to be an everyday player, and he's going to provide almost nothing in terms of power. So I think that's overrating him a little bit. Alec Bohm was another one I wanted to mention, who I like the skill set of, but 108th overall. I mean, going 50 picks ahead of Gio Urshela, that combination of overrated, underrated. Like, Bohm hit 6 home runs and like 150 at bats last year. So it's not even clear he's going to be a 20 homer guy at a position where you really need him to be. And, you know, I did the Urshela comparison. I think Cabrian Hayes' upside is a lot higher. I think Cabrian Hayes is probably going to contribute some steals in a way Bohm won't. And power expectations, batting average expectations, I'd put them at least on equal footing. And Cabrian Hayes is going a 150th compared to Bohm's 108. So I don't know why Bohm is getting elevated so much. I think he's good. I think those other players are good too. And I think they deserve to be about on equal footing in ADP as opposed to this 4 or 5 round difference.
Keep an eye out for Scott's articles regarding this. He's going to have overvalued and undervalued players based on ADP coming out this week. So you can find that cbssports.com/fantasy. I did want to wrap up with some questions here, Scott. Admittedly, it's going to be harder the next couple of weeks to get to people's questions because during our position previews, those are jam-packed. We're going to try to get to as many players, deep dive some guys, give you sleepers, breakouts, and busts at every single position. So it will be harder to answer questions on those podcasts. So we'll get to some of your questions starting right now. This one's from Steve in Northeast Connecticut. This was an Apple Podcast review. He says that I play in a 13x13 head-to-head 1-win categories league. So all he has to do is win, you know, the majority.
7 of the 13. Oh no, there's 26 categories.
Right. So he has to win 14 out of 26 and he will earn a win in his head-to-head categories league. Obviously a bunch of extra categories here, but things that are centered around total bases plus walks and strikeouts for hitters. And then for pitchers, they add complete games and no hitters, which please don't do this. I mean, it is so archaic in baseball right now. Like, how many of these are you going to get throughout the course?
No hitters is a category.
how many of these are you going to get throughout the course of the season? It's like playing with triple doubles in a fantasy basketball league. It's very weird. The question basically is, in a league like this with so many categories, Scott, what would your strategy be? Would it change, or are you just trying to go for like an all-around balance?
Well, I imagine with this many categories, there's a lot of redundancies. Clearly, there are some categories that will almost never come into play. So it's kind of impossible to strategize for them. I would say I wouldn't overthink it. I would probably lean more toward points league rankings versus categories leagues, which are really just for 5x5 categories leagues, since there will be some contributions that are factored into points leagues that aren't factored into those 5x5 categories leagues. But I wouldn't turn the rankings upside down trying to make it specifically tailored for this.
This next one's from RTomp242. My top 5 pitchers are Garrett Cole, Blake Snell, Clayton Kershaw, Carlos Carrasco, and Sandy Alcantara. My hitters are by far the best in the league, so I won't name them all here. What pitchers are you guys looking to target? It doesn't have to be sleepers or late round value picks. Just in general, which guys will you have the most shares of this season, Scott, among pitchers?
Oh, that's a difficult question. Well, maybe Carrasco, given how far ahead of him I am versus the consensus, though I don't think our mock drafts have gotten that much of him. Hyunjin Ryu, I feel like, is never gets enough credit. Zach Plesac. You know, Hyunjin Ryu, over the last 3 years, he has the second lowest ERA to Jacob deGrom among all qualifying pitchers. That's over the last 3 years. Framber Valdez, I like a lot first compared to the consensus, and I love getting him as like my number 5 guy. Where does he typically go? Framber Valdez, and 96 on average. Those would probably be the main guys. You know, the early round pitchers, you know, it's really just going to depend on where I'm drafting. It's going to be kind of luck of the draw thing. So I don't think I don't think I can point to anyone there who I'm going to have more than everyone else will. It seems like Sixto Sanchez and Sandy Alcantara both tend to fall a lot. I'm not really sure why. I guess because they're not, they project for less than a strikeout per inning, but I think they excel in every other way a pitcher can, specifically how deep they pitch into games. So I tend to be kind of high on them compared to the consensus.
Nice. Yeah. Carrasco stands out to me. I have a bunch of shares already. Excited about him. Chris Paddock, someone that I do like, that's going typically in round 7 through 9. I get him as like my SP3 or my SP4 usually. Joe Musgrove, you know, if you can get him as like your SP5 in the double digit rounds, something we talk a lot about that I am still pretty excited about as well. Mike Soroka, pay attention to the news. He's coming back from a torn Achilles, but things have been positive thus far. So you can get him at a discount. Tyler Malley is one of my favorite sleepers that I target quite consistently. And then if you play in a points leagues, just like Dallas Keuchel, Marcus Stroman, Marco Gonzalez, just these guys are viewed as boring. They're going to go deep into starts. They're going to give you innings, should give you solid ratios as well. Maybe not many strikeouts, but those are three that stand out to me as undervalued names to pay attention to as well. This one's from A.E. Norton. I was undefeated last year and I get to pick where I want to draft this season in head-to-head points. Any suggestions on what draft pick is the best?
Well, if you play in a points league, I think the lowest you can choose to pick and trust that you'll get one of the big three starting pitchers is third. Because they might go 1, 2, 3 in a points league. I don't rank them that way, but they might. If you don't really care whether you get a pitcher or a great hitter, then I would say, you know, those three pitchers and you're adding on Trout and Betts and Soto. So if I think those seven, those three pitchers, Cole DeGrom and Bieber, and those three hitters, Trout, Betts, and Soto, are what you're really hoping to get with your first pick in a points league, one of those six. So I would say sixth, unless you have to have a pitcher, then third.
Mm-hmm. And you know your league better than we do, A.E. Norton. So if people don't take pitching as early, I would just take the furthest pick that would ensure I would get one of the big three starting pitchers. So you know your league better than we do, but I would ideally in a points league want one of Bieber, DeGrom, or Gerrit Cole, who I do have ranked 1, 2, and 3 overall in that format. This one's from Trenton Andrew 7. Kwanghyun Kim, starting pitcher for the Cardinals, had a fantastic year last year. This year, I'm still snagging him super late in drafts, normally as my 6th, 7th, or even 8th starter. Am I missing something? Was last year a mirage? And is he really not very good? Or am I still getting good value taking him in the later rounds? For Kim, the ADP is 228. He is the 70th starting pitcher off the board. A 1.62 ERA, Scott, but that comes with a 4.52 xFIP. What are some expectations for Kwanghyun Kim?
Yeah, I don't trust Kwanghyun Kim. I never trusted him last year when he kept churning out good start after good start. I expected it to all come crashing down at some point. It never did, but that doesn't mean it never will, especially considering how short last season was. Even in terms of xERA, which takes into account hard contact in a way, xFIP and Sierra won it. And I don't think it's as predictive as xFIP, but you know, if you want to say it was, xERA was still 381 versus 162 for a non-strikeout pitcher. I mean, that sounds like more of a late round guy. I don't have him in the draftable range at all. Because the strikeout potential is so poor, and it's not like he's this extreme ground ball pitcher to make up for it. So, yeah, I'm not backing Kwanghyun Kim as somebody I want in fantasy.
Well, all right, we're going to wrap there. He is Scott. I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow, back again on Tuesday with starting our position previews. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.